All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, August 22nd. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Oh, there's a little emphasis, a little different on your name there.
Hey man, from I'm Daily Fan, mix it up, get my radio voice on, you know.
Yeah, you sound great. You sound silky smooth for sure. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Still time to grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to cover you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings for MLB. Also have our NFL base projections up already. So those are, those aren't obviously far from a final product, but it's a good way to at least get started with NFL to sort of like look at pricing, see where lineups are coming in right now. Actually, outside of news, we're probably getting pretty close. NFL is one of those things, I guess things can change in an instant. But anyway, base projections are up there right now. Go check it out. All of that falls under the same subscription package. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you are all good to go, buddy. Baseball continues to chug along. It's crazy that we're like almost at the end of August. And I always think that like end of August is when baseball ends, but then I forget that it goes all the way through September. No, we saw lots and lots of games
left. October, dude, if you want to do playoffs too.
It's funny about the attitude. I will say the attitude toward DFS MLB is one. I don't know if it's this year. I'm just noticing it more. I'm not saying for our users. I'm just like even more like along the pro level guys. Like I was listening to a podcast yesterday with some guys kind of complaining about MLB. It was an NFL podcast, but they were complaining about MLB. I've seen it more on Twitter. Do you think that baseball, it's such a long game and the variance is so high that even like the most, static of minds.
People that all that this is they think about, right? Like the people who put in 50K a night or whatever.
Correct. Like even then, do you think it tries the patience of... I know baseball can try the patience of our users. For me, I've been pretty steady about it all year. It's like it's just been fine for me. But it seems like the emotional levels in baseball go up even more. And I'm wondering if that just happens all the way up through the ranks.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I think like on some level, sweating DFS baseball, I can't speak for everyone, but like for me is sort of the least fun one, right? Because it's one thing if you have tons of different lineups in or whatever, but I tend to just play the optimal lineup. And sweating one lineup, which is the way the majority of people play, I would imagine, is kind of painful. Like, you watch and, like, you have these huge leverage moments where you're like, I got a guy at second and third and no outs. And then he just pops up, Like, right. It's just that repeated. And, yeah, sometimes you're on the good side of that. But when you're on the good side of it, at least for me, it feels like a relief, kind of. You're like, well, thank God this guy hit a home run, Like, right. I made the right play and it worked out. Look at me. Like, DJ LeMahieu hit a home run against the lefty at home in Coors at 2,700, But I don't feel like, Like, I guess it's just different for me.
Maybe so, I don't feel the same way because I just do play more lineups. Yeah, I play, 40 to 50 lineups a night. So maybe that's the difference for me. Like, maybe that's why I'm just not as, I'm just not beholden to just having
to attached to the sweat. That's probably true.
Exactly. Anyway, it is interesting as we get into the sort of the dog days of August here with baseball continuing to chug along. And a lot of the things we've said over the course of the year just kind of hold true. You'll see when, if you listen to the podcast, a lot of the points you can make in baseball just generally end up becoming the same. That's not the same for all sports. Basketball and NFL tend to change more. At least, NFL, you have more of a slow burn and then it all happens all at once. But there's just plenty to talk about. Anyway, it is interesting to kind of hone in on the differences between each sport and to find out which ones, you personally are wanting to play, not you, James Davis, but you collective you are wanting to play because you're not contractually obligated to just play DFS every night, as a fan. And I think sometimes people think they are, and I would definitely caution against that because I think that's also what leads to some frustration. All right, let's talk about today's.
Real quick, though, I think one other piece on the fatigue, and I think it's probably a bigger piece for me actually, is that the decisions are the same because I'm fairly. Detached from the emotional aspect of it for a lot of ways. But one thing I really like about basketball and football in particular, as it comes up, is the decisions are just a little bit different every single week, right? It's like, it's not what, because in baseball, you never run out of players to play. So unless you're playing these small slates, you don't have to really use your intuition at all. You can just simply trust the numbers. And for a lot of people, that's just not as interesting. Whereas in basketball, say Kyrie Irving goes out and there's someone in as a backup, right? And then you're like, well, how good will this backup be? What kind of usage will he get? And you start thinking about different things. But if Miguel Cabrera goes out, whoever replaces him, we can pretty much know how he's going to play. And that's, I think it just makes it less like a game and more like a job or more just like a little math problem, and I think for me anyway, that kind of takes some of the sting off. But
yeah, that makes sense. Kyrie Irving, by the way, a now beardless Kyrie Irving, the first person ever to shave his beard and look older. I don't know if you've seen pictures of him, shaved his beard off and looks 10 years older. I don't know how he pulled that off, but that's how it worked. Okay, let's go into some baseball for today after that rousing get the full baseball hype man came in there.
If you need graphs out or a FanDuel, I'm available. If you need your baseball commercial,
I could absolutely make it. Couldn't have been a more rousing endorsement for the game of baseball here about what to talk about. Okay, pitching today. You know, there's some decent pitchers going today. The guy who's probably the best arm overall is Archer. Now I'm wondering if he's at home. So the good news there. Gets up against Toronto, not a great matchup, a little bit expensive. Do you see him as, he's 10-2 on FanDuel, he's really expensive on DraftKings, 12-7. Cash game play here, or does the price kind of actually move him more toward a tournament play?
No, I think he's potentially a cash game play. On DraftKings, it might be a little tougher, at least for me. But I think on FanDuel, you know, our system has him as a 3.9 points per dollar multiplier, which is really solid. You do have some other good options, a little cheaper, arguably similar true talent level pitchers. But no, I think Archer taking him against Toronto, it's not ideal. But the home park is excellent. It's a dramatic shift in the pitcher's direction from the Rogers Center. And I think that might just be enough. I mean, Vegas sees it as enough to keep the implied run total relatively low for the Blue Jays as compared to what we'll see elsewhere. So, yeah, I think it's perfectly cash game viable. I don't think it's like a insta-lock, just jam him in all lineups the way the most expensive good pitcher often is. But, yeah, he's right there for me.
Yeah, Archer's having one of his best seasons in the major, at least from a strikeout perspective. He's striking out over 11 batters per nine. That is his highest mark since basically 2012. And he's actually been able to keep the walks down a little bit from the last 2 years. That's exactly what a guy like him needs to do. The walks were always sort of like his bugaboo, but that he seems to have been neutralizing them a little bit this season.
The last three seasons, the thing I like about Archer actually is his consistency. The last three seasons, yeah, he's effectively been the exact same guy, which is, you know, after that injury issue he had in 2013, he's come back and three seasons in a row been roughly 10.5 Ks per nine, roughly just under three walks per nine, around a home run per nine. Like, this is who he is, an excellent 3.3-ish ex-fit pitcher, and he's even better at home. So, yeah, just a true ace.
And once you can get with Toronto, once you can get through the top of the lineup, through like the Bautista, Donaldson, Smoke, Morales section of that lineup, the bottom of their lineup is pretty bad. Montero, Pilar, who's pretty bad against righties, yeah. Ryan Goins, who's just bad all around, and Darwin Barney, who's just destined to hit ninth the rest of his life. Once you can get down to that bottom level, and those guys don't even draw a ton of walks. Montero has some patience, but that's kind of where he's going to need to get his work done. As long as he can avoid like any sort of huge mistakes to the top of the lineup. Yeah, I think in the end, probably he ends up becoming like the FanDuel pitcher for us, just because I think there are enough question marks around the other guys. I'm with you that he's just probably too expensive on DraftKings. I don't think you can pay over $12,000 for him without really punting probably the other position, pitcher position. And I actually just don't think you need to do that on this slate. But you did mention other guys that we can consider after him, at least for either for cash games or tournaments. Where can we go if we're going to pivot off Archer on either site?
Sure. So the elephant in the room for our projection system is going to be Jeff Samardzija. Samardzija this season has been a guy people love to hate. 9 Ks per 9, 1.3 walks per 9. And next FIP, almost identical to Archer's. Obviously, you'll take the greater strikeout total if you're just comparing apples to apples there. But he's just had a lot of problems converting that XFIP into good performances on the mound. I mean, 4.8 ERA this season is just basically horrible. 15% home run to fly ball ratio, which has yielded a 1.3 home runs per nine, has him basically just disappointing you night after night for DFS purposes. But in the last two starts, the XFIP is still solid. 6 Ks and 1 walk in 6 innings in each of those against at Washington, not the greatest matchup, and then a kind of a disappointing one against the Phillies there. But I don't know, man. Like, the season progresses and he keeps doing the same stuff. What do you take, or what's your take right now on Samardzija?
And for baseball, this is like the single hardest kind of, at least for a pitcher, like play to break down, right? Because all the things you said are correct. Like, say it again.
I just did an amazing job doing exactly that. So if you just want to listen back, then.
Oh yeah, so everyone just hit rewind and just listen to what James said, and then skip back ahead to where I'm going to leave off here. No, but his peripherals are like elite. You know, like the 9 Ks to 1.3 walks per nine, like 3.3 xFIP, like those numbers. just taking those numbers is elite. And it kind of like begs the question, right? Like, well, what's the real him? So he's gotten killed on BABIP as compared to his just career numbers. His left on base percentage is really what's actually causing him problems too, because you just, once the guy gets on base, the guy's just 34% of the time just scoring. And so like that will just absolutely crush you, that kind of number. And I'm the smarter train all season. I think I'm just going to stick on it. Like, the ballpark helps him here. The Brewers do strike out a lot as a team. They have guys at the top of the lineup that can do damage, but they can also K a lot. You know, Thames.
Braun, they're the top strikeout team in the majors against Reds.
Right, exactly. And like, they also have a lot of power. Like, Walker, Braun, Shaw, and Santana can cause you real problems. Even Thames. I mean, they can cause you real problems at the top of that lineup. Like, for what's happening to him this year, this is like a great team to face and also just a horrible team to face, right? Because this is just this team is does exactly what he's had his success rate and his like whatever is causing him problems. They do these exact same thing. So I think I'm willing to do it. The bad luck part of it has driven his price down just so consistently, or kept his price down so consistently over the course of the year that this is why he just shows up every time as a part of the discussion, because when pieces of bad luck keep your price maybe like 1,000 less than it should be, then I think I'm just willing to continue to do it. I know people aren't going to want to. He's had a lot of blow-ups in his past. It would make me feel real uncomfortable for cash games to do it. But yeah, I mean, at 8,400 on FanDuel.
Anyway, though, or has it gone too far? Like, if that comes in, say that Samardzija is in the top overall lineup, but Archer's in the 11th overall lineup. Is that the type of thing where you would maybe advise people to turn their eyes downward there, or are you just thinking to trust?
That's a good question. I think actually that's going to be the case tonight too. Like right now, Samardzija is in the top lineup, and Archer's about a point. And this is for FanDuel. It's about a point and a half off. And that point and a half usually starts to get kind of drilled down a little bit if there's like a cheap bat that comes in. Now there are so many decent like mid tier bats that are in such good spots that I'm not sure it happens, but I think that's going to be the actual case tonight. I'm not sure. I think in the NDI, I probably would advise Archer just because the consistency has been so much there. But
probably higher, probably too.
In some ways, to me, like, Samardzija has been consistent, consistent too. He's been consistently unlucky. I don't know. It's really, really hard to figure out where to factor in some of this stuff like over the course of a season. And I'm just mostly just shrugging my shoulders and say I'm not exactly sure right now. I am sure that people do not want to see this guy's name anymore. I'm 100% positive on, because that has been made abundantly clear every single time he comes out there. He's had enough good games to probably make it so that people don't want to commit complete suicide on it. But it's a close one. After him, like, another guy that's showing up kind of with a higher projection here, but I think it's because of matchup, is Lance Lynn. At what point he faces the Padres? Padres stink, obviously. He gets them in San Diego. At what point? Lynn is just kind of a guy. I don't know if like I remember Lynn just being better. I guess at times in his career he just has been better. Yeah.
And he's just a real guy. Like when he first came up, the first couple seasons as a starter, he was good.
Yeah, and that he's not good anymore. So he's been striking out about 7.5/9. Walks are up the highest of his career. Do you see him as a guy that you can play just because you get a great matchup on him? Like, at what point does matchup trump the idea that like, he's just not even an 8/9 guy. Do you think that the Padres are the team, though, that you can kind of go back and sort of hope that he can grab some of what he used to have in his past?
Yeah, so if you're playing Lynn tonight, you're playing him exclusively for the matchup. Padres' second highest strikeout rate in the majors against right-handed pitching and the second lowest WOBA against righties. Lynn himself, I'm just convinced that he is a worse version of his old self. Like, you know, he missed all of 2016 with an injury, right? So he's back this season. The K's are down. The walks are up. I mean, I don't know if you noticed this too, but he's run tremendously hot on BABIP. Like, he's got a .232 BABIP allowed this year. So that drives down everything across the board. And yeah, so sure, he has a 3 ERA, so you're really happy with that. But don't count on that BABIP being anything close to that as the season progresses. That's about 65 points below his established level. So I think that Lynn, if we're just comparing Lynn and Samardzija, it's hard to say who is riskier here for me. Probably Samardzija, just because the Brewers have higher upside, but Samardzija has such higher upside that it's hard to imagine just trotting Lynn out there, because I think that it's very hard for me to imagine Lynn just going out there and being the best points per dollar pitcher on the night, right? Like, it's something along the lines of his last few starts, like 6 innings, 3 Ks, a few earned runs allowed. Like, that's definitely in play, but I just don't see the spot where he goes out there and gives you 6 innings of 8 Ks and no runs. Like, he just doesn't have that in him, and that makes it really tough for him to be the best pitcher tonight.
Yeah, he's interesting. Not in a good way. His just looking at some of his pitch FX stuff. His velocity is down this year as like over his career. Like he was averaging 93.5 miles per hour on his fastball. It's 92.5. That 1 mile per hour, 1 mile per hour difference in just dip in velocity. Not a good sign for a pitcher, right? Like when you just aren't throwing as hard. His outside of the zone swing percentage. The guys just aren't chasing out of the zone for him anymore. And if you look at those two numbers, it kind of just starts to make sense about why the strikeouts just aren't there anymore for him, and why the walks are there, right? Because now all of a sudden all that outside of the zone stuff that maybe you were getting guys on earlier in your career, now they're just watching it go by and then walking to first base. And that those signs for me are just signs that not that it's over for him, but he's probably not coming back to like that 8.5K per nine thing unless like he needed a whole season to get over the injury. But that typically does not happen like in your age 30 season, right? Like where you just kind of get all the way better. I'm with you. I think our system's drawing it out because the matchup's great. It would make me a little worried, and it would definitely make me worried to just have him be like the sole pitcher on FanDuel. It's a little different on DraftKings where he's pretty cheap, 7,400, and at that point you can just kind of take the matchup and just get some savings. But on FanDuel, I'd be worried about just like playing him in cash as the only guy that I was had to stare at and kind of hope he did well.
Yeah.
After those three guys, I mean that was my sort of list. I don't know if you have other guys that are kind of standing out to you here tonight. Those were the guys I kind of considered to probably be like in the cash game discussion, but I could be wrong. Is there someone else you think that falls into there, or you just like other tournament plays? Where are you thinking for pitcher?
Yeah, so I think that basically sums up my cash game thoughts as well. I think you can go down the card a little bit and think about a guy like Carrasco. Like, he's not going to be a popular play tonight because of his opponent, which is the Red Sox. But the Red Sox this season have been a lot more name than they actually have been performance against right-handed pitching. They're 20th in the majors in terms of WOBA against righties this season, so the bottom third of the league. They don't strike out a ton, but Carrasco is just such a strikeout machine that, you know, he can put together a great strikeout game even against a team that doesn't strike out a lot. So I don't think you want it for cash game purposes. I don't think it really makes any sense whatsoever. But for a guy with 19 strikeouts in his last 13 innings pitched, I don't see any reason why I would avoid him in terms of like just trying to spike a big tournament, right? Especially because the guys at the top that we've talked about, Archer and Samardzija, if those are the other two options in terms of like, you know, kind of treading that line between safety and upside for big tournament purposes, I think most people are going to be, they're going to talk themselves into doing something like Archer for cash, Samardzija for tournaments. That's just what my gut tells me. But I think both of those guys have significant risk attached to them. Like the Blue Jays just could hit Archer, right? Like that could happen. Samardzija, as we know, can just give up a ton of dongs, not let the guys who get on base get stranded there. So I think Carrasco, from a high upside performance, he's definitely a guy with just the highest total point upside on the night. And that always interests me for big tournies.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you just look at the Vegas numbers here between Carrasco and Archer, they're nearly identical. They're both -190 favorites, both with 8.5 implied, 8.5 over under, which leads to right around 3.5 implied runs. So from that point of view, they're exactly the same, right? Same exact implied run, same exact win percentage. And then like their overall numbers, like you said, like Carrasco is just a tick below him in K's and actually better on walks. It's really interesting. That's a great call. I actually think don't think people will hone in on him as much simply because, like what you said, the Red Sox, that will turn people off. Yeah, getting him for $1,000 cheaper, that's like the perfect pivot off Archer for a tournament. He's actually even close. Honestly, with some of those numbers, he's actually probably even close to cash game just because he's just $1,000 cheaper than Archer is on FanDuel. I think you can make a case for him. And if the Red Sox lineup comes in even a little bit different than what we have it now, like this lineup, the problem is they don't strike out a ton, and that's the big difference. Like the top of that lineup, like Betts doesn't strike out at all. Nunez is not a big strikeout guy. It's really hard to get strikeouts, even like farther down the list, like Bogarts.
Oh yeah, sure. And that's right. The Blue Jays are a better matchup. I mean, the Blue Jays have an even worse WOBA against righties. So I think that matchup probably swings in Archer's favor for safety purposes. But yeah, I mean, for Carrasco too, like the Red Sox have Doug Fister going, which just increases his win rate or win percentage probably. So yeah, there's something to like there. I don't know that it's a slam dunk by any means, but something I'm considering. A
couple other guys to possibly consider tonight. And what are your thoughts on Jimmy Nelson? He's had sort of a breakout season this year, a breakout in the sense that, like, I think people were always waiting for him to just, like, dial up some more of the Ks that he had shown in the minors, and he never really translated to the majors. Like, he was about a strikeout an inning guy in the minors, and then basically since 2013, he was, like, a 7.5 strikeout guy for the Brewers, like, for four straight seasons, just kind of did the exact same thing. And this season, all of a sudden, spikes it to over 10, just about 10 strikeouts per nine. he had that in his pedigree when he was coming through the minors, and then it just completely disappeared. Do you see him as like, do you, like, he's been excellent this season? 3.12 xFIP. Like I said, the pretty high K rate. Really has his other big problem for a lot of his career been the walks. He's really limited those. Do you see him like as sort of entering the discussion as real pitcher, like in the same group of, you know, Samardzija, who we mentioned before? His numbers are actually like pretty close to Carrasco's this year, just in terms of like his overall numbers. Do you see those as real? I mean, the only reason I ask is like this is the first season where he's ever really done it.
Yeah, it's always tough to say. I don't know that you could go ahead and label him a 10 Ks per 9 guy for the rest of his career or anything, but if you look at the track record for this season, it's not like it's overinflated by a few starts early in the season or something, or like a small sample size. He's had some really excellent pitching performances recently. He's also had some, you know, things you'd just as soon forget, like the 9 earned runs he gave up against the Reds. But that's kind of who Jimmy Nelson is. You know, if he gets out there and he gets going, he can start mowing people down. And getting him pitching in San Francisco is obviously going to be a step in the right direction for him. It's kind of interesting on Nelson because he's actually throwing the fastball a little less this year, but he's throwing it harder than he ever has before. So I wonder if he's just getting a little bit more savvy in terms of his pitch selection and, you know, just trying to take advantage of the moment when it's right, keeping hitters more off balance. You know, there are things that he could be doing that would be kind of off the radar of the mainstream consciousness that could just be yielding to better results. You know, pitching is such a fine thing, and it really is the so-called cliche game of inches that even these little tweaks can sometimes turn around pitchers. And he's not old, right? I mean, he's only 28, so there's definitely a potential for him just to be something that he didn't used to be. That being said, he's not a cash game play for me by any stretch. But yeah, for big tournaments, I think absolutely.
Yeah, no, he's not a cash game play, just mostly just because he doesn't have enough win expectation here, and like that does kind of matter for cash game purposes. But
it's also
like,
11,000 on DraftKings.
Oh, he's too expensive on DraftKings.
Yeah, like,
yeah. Well, I've always said that a lot of times you can decide on some of your plays by just doing the subtraction difference between how FanDuel and DraftKings price a guy, and that, like, if you can just take some of the biggest spreads, you're usually, for at least FanDuel purposes, that's where you're finding a deal. Like, his DraftKings pricing is so much tighter. I don't know, exponents tighter than FanDuel's is. But if you just do that simple math, like, you can usually find pretty good value. And Nelson fits the bill with that because he's coming to GP. Frankly, Carrasco kind of fits the same bill too, just because the way they're pricing DraftKings is pretty divergent. That Giants lineup is pretty bad. They've been pretty bad all season. They don't strike out a ton, but they just don't have anyone in that lineup that can do really any kind of damage at all. That line has swung a little bit away from Samardzija too, so I just update that just came through in our system. I wonder if that's going to knock Samardzija down just a little bit. I think it's going to be pretty close with some of these pitchers tonight. A lot of these guys are pretty good on paper. The matchups are okay, and it's just, I don't know if they're all coming in kind of close together because of all those things kind of converging on each other, but I do think the pitching decisions tonight are going to be a little closer than they usually are. All right, let's get into some stacks here in a second. Hit us up with a sponsor before that.
Yeah, sure. So I'd love to talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime.com is a great place to go to get a fantasy sports app that's really unlike anything else. You can go over there and check them out, but what you can do with No Halftime is play these one-on-one daily fantasy challenges where you pick a single player and then you pick someone you think that guy's going to outperform. So if you're thinking baseball, maybe tonight you would look at Carrasco and Chris Archer. If you had a strong opinion either way, you could pick one, issue a challenge to the world for any amount of money that you would see fit. And if someone else picks up the challenge, then it's game on. Winner take all, minus a little bit of rake, and you go from there. If no one takes the challenge, no sweat, you get your money back, and you can put that money back into some other challenge. You can also go on to No Halftime's great app and go around, you know, just seeing what other challenges people have issued and seeing if there's any money to be made. There's always tons of challenges every single night for every single sport they cover. Great active app, and if you use promo code DFSR, you can get a 100% bonus up to a $25 deposit. So check them out and tell them we sent you.
All right, let's take a look at some stacks that we can get on tonight. Cash game tournament. Where's your eye kind of drifting here when you started to look at teams that are in good spots? There are some pretty bad pitchers going tonight. We talked about some of the good ones. The list is kind of just as long on the other side of guys who just, I don't know, aren't either major league caliber pitchers or just at the bottom sort of the barrel. What are some teams you think are in good spots here?
Yeah, so my philosophy when it comes to looking for teams in good spots is typically to use some combination of Vegas lines and the opposing pitcher and just his credentials and, you know, kind of the profile of a pitcher that can blow up. The pitcher I think most likely to blow up on any given night when he starts is probably Paul Blackburn. Blackburn just has remarkable peripherals for someone who's still pitching in the major leagues at 3.6 Ks per nine and 2.6 walks per nine. Like, it's very hard to imagine that someone could stick in the majors, striking out just 3.6 guys every nine innings. you know, that's like the guy who goes five innings with one strikeout. Like, that's Paul Blackburn. His ground ball rate's pretty high, and he's done a nice job depressing BABIP this season. So the ERA is 3.46. So I guess, like, you know, the A's would find it difficult to send him back down to the minors. But my friends, that won't last. And so, therefore, I declare the Baltimore Orioles as the best stack of the night, kind of by far. Vegas sees it the same way. And you can obviously get a lot of value stacking them because, you know, this isn't a conventional spot where FanDuel would boost their prices. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to like there.
Yeah, no, the top of that lineup is pretty much all in play. You know, they've been hitting Beckham leadoff. He's been great since getting traded and moving into that leadoff spot. Machado, even at 4,000, still pretty cheap. Jones went home. I think he homered twice last night. He was in all of our lineups. The top of the lineup. I mean, we're all the way down. Like,
Jones still cheap too, 3,000.
I mean, right. Like, the rest of the lineup too. Like, it's almost like you just can't. You probably don't want to play as many Baltimore guys as possible. Like, FanDuel, you're going to be just limited to four. But even down all the way down to the bottom of the lineup, they're going to cause this guy real problems. I do think they're probably the most popular stack of the night from cash game levels, maybe even from tournaments too, just because anytime you get a pitcher that just can't strike anybody out, the ceiling is really high on everybody else. That's really kind of all you need to have happen is just your guys not to strike out and just run a little hot, like with BABIP or home run here and there. So I do think they're probably one of the more popular stacks. After them, other teams in good spots tonight.
Yeah, sure. I mean, speaking of people who don't strike anyone out, Tommy Malone's pitching tonight, which, again, who knows how this continues to happen. But Tommy Malone has ducked under an 8 ERA for this season, so congratulations to him. But it's still not going super well. The 4.6 xFIP is the highest of his career, and he's just basically translating. Like, people used to call Tommy Malone – this is the way it works, by the way, in kind of the mainstream media is – a guy comes up and he's lucky at first and they're like, Tommy Malone or Jeremy Hellickson or whoever, this guy just knows how to get outs, man. Sure, he strikes out 5 guys per 9, but like when a push comes to shove, he gets the ground ball when he needs it or whatever the story is. Not so with Tommy Malone. He's going to continue to give up home runs at an impressive clip here. So far this season, 3 home runs every 9 innings, Doug. That's a very high total. And it just makes sense. The guy gives up an insane amount of hard contact, and his ground ball rate is at 36%. So I love targeting Tommy Malone, and the people that get the benefit of facing him tonight are the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks this season, they're kind of a weird team in this way because they've been a lot better against right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching this year. But I still think some of the guys at the top of that order, like, you know, obviously Goldschmidt comes to mind, but even AJ Pollock, JD Martinez, like that's a 2-3-4 of right-handed bats that should give Tommy Malone fits. And I love that trio for big tournaments.
No, yeah, I'm right in lockstep with you on that. Pollock is a guy our system's really been liking. He went yard last night, was another guy. If you couldn't tell, the system was absolutely crushed last night, especially on DraftKings where it kind of had all the home runs. But Goldschmidt I do think is going to be a popular play. He's just been a lefty killer for his entire career. Not much has changed. JD Martinez falls sort of in that same range. This is one of those ones where I'm fine getting away from sort of the bottom of the lineup just because I think most of the power here is concentrated just in that 2-3-4 spot. And who knows what they're going to do with their lineup. I mean, right now Peralta is projected to hit first, which makes no sense, but the Diamondbacks have done a pretty good job this year. I haven't been able to talk about it lately, but they've done a pretty good job this year of just putting out some of the most nonsensical lineups that you've ever seen in your life. And tonight might be, you know, who knows? Chris Iannetta hits first. Who the hell knows, like, what they have, like, what tricks they have up their sleeve against a lefty, especially when you're just, like, gifted 3, like, elite hitter right in the middle of the lineup. They find ways to screw it up. But, no, I do think the Diamondbacks are going to be a pretty popular play. I like the Yankees here against Matt Boyd. Matt Boyd, not as bad as the two guys that were kind of mentioned before. I take that back. He might be worse than Malone. He's striking out 7 batters per 9. XFIP's up over 5. Yankees, much has been made lately of just like Aaron Judge not being as good in the second half as he was in the first. Like, newsflash, he was never going to be as good in the second half as he was in the first.
Babe Ruth, right?
Better. I mean, he was a combination of awesome and then awesomely lucky too. Like, he had just like, I never talk about season long, but one of the season long things I was trying to tell people, at least on Twitter and some other play, like in the chat, was like, if you have Aaron Judge at the All-Star break, just trade him now. Like, you'll never get a higher return just because he's never going to be as lucky as he was in the first half. That being said, his struggles in the second half have brought the price down. Like, he's 3,800 on FanDuel. That's an auto play for me. At that price, this is exactly the kind of situation we wait for. We wait for the price to come down off like those $5,000 levels that he was at when he was just hitting a home run every other at bat, basically. And now he's just striking out. He's striking out a lot. He's basically striking out the same amount as he was and just not turning him as much into home runs. Great time to buy on Judge. Great time to buy on him. Gary Sanchez at 3,500. Sanchez is another guy who's been excellent this season. I love the Yankees in this spot. Aaron Hicks is also a guy I think believe is better on the platoon side against lefties for his career. Top of that lineup looks really, really good. And you see 3,800 for Judge is a deal. You agree with that, correct?
Oh, for sure. I mean, just against Matt Boyd as well. Like it all lines up perfectly. Do think Judge has been lucky, but it's also really tough to tell with young guys like this because, well, obviously, like the 374 BABIP is probably unsustainable. We have seen guys post like 350 BABIPs for their career. It's just that Occam's razor suggests the most likely thing here is luck, and I don't mind being a day late on a guy like Judge. That said, now we're getting probably too much hate in the other direction, and it seems like a great play against Boyd.
Yeah, you can have a higher BABIP when your hard contact rate is like up near 50%, right? Because you're just
blasting line drives in everyone's face and ripping people's heads off. Sure.
Right, exactly. Like when you give fielders just zero time to react and move, you're just going to have a higher BABIP for your career. The strikeout rate is real. 32% strikeout rate. I believe he set some kind of record for like most consecutive games with a strikeout. I think I read that headline. Like, so it's not
nice.
The dubious honor you don't really want, but. Same time, like he 17% walk rate. This guy's just still, he's a superstar, right? Like he's a superstar no matter which way you kind of work the numbers around. And just the fact that his price has dropped just because he's struggled a little bit since the All-Star break makes it a terrific time to buy. Any other teams that jump out to you here before we get out of here?
Yeah, I like both sides of the Twins-White Sox game tonight. The pitchers going in that one are Kyle Gibson and Lucas Giolito.
Giolito.
both of those guys are going. Gibson's just kind of a run-of-the-mill terrible pitcher. 6 Ks per 9, 4 walks per 9. Pretty much who he's been for his entire career. Just like solidly below average. Never really lived up to the perceived prospect potential there. Yeah, the BABIP is kind of high, but like it's always been high for him. Career 3.10 number. The home run per 9, or home runs per 9 and home run to fly ball ratio is probably a little higher than it will be in the long term, but he's just not good. There's not really anything else I can say about the guy other than that he probably shouldn't pitch in the major leagues. Lucas Giolito, he's more of an unknown quantity to me. Like he's been good in the minors in the past, like somewhere between good and excellent at times. But his first major league stint with the Nats last year was pretty horrendous. 4.6 Ks per 9 and 5 walks per 9. It's about as bad as one can conceivably do. Now in the White Sox, he was good in the minors this year, but who knows how that's going to translate. I think it's a little risky. You've talked about in the past how, you know, stacking against a guy with big K potential can be risky. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see Giolito turn the corner and become a real major league pitcher. But as of right now, I don't think you can count on that. So I think, again, if you're just trying to get stacks that maybe won't be quite as chalky as some others, I think either side of that game could look pretty good.
One thing that's a great ballpark and that kind of boosts the power expectation all around. Also in terms of ballpark, I made a mistake earlier. I said Lance Lynn was pitching in San Diego. That was incorrect. He's pitching in St. Louis tonight. So I take that back. All the other thoughts I had about Lynn, remain the same. I noticed because I was going to say that another good stack might be the Cardinals against Clayton Richard, who has a pretty low K rate for the season. They'll run a train of righties, Pham, DeJong, Fowler is a switch hitter, but he's better against lefties for his career. Molina and Jorko down like 2-6. And even Carpenter is actually pretty platoon neutral for his career. So I don't mind stacking like different parts of that Cardinals lineup. It's interesting when you think about stacks. Like, so when we talked about Arizona, we kind of said, you know, you can concentrate your stacks just sort of on that 2-3-4 part of the lineup and have a tremendous amount of upside. The Cardinals are a team that you can kind of just say, oh, you know, I got this guy. If you heard it, the landscaper next door is just, sounds like he's chopping up bodies with something. Like, I don't think he's actually going over after any greenery. It just sounds like he's like maybe chopping up a body or two. We're gonna get out of here in a second, but you can kind of switch around where you stack. Like you can kind of stack the bottom of this order a little bit, I think, like the Jorko, Molina, Fowler part, like the 4-5-6, yeah. And still feel pretty good about it. But like the Orioles kind of work the same way where they go so deep that you don't just need to stack just the middle of the lineup because they're kind of all in good spots. All right, before this gardener outside kills somebody or I go outside and kill him for ruining the end of the podcast, dfsr.com/MLB gets you a free 3-day trial to the projection system. That's going to have football projections up there for you as well. So go over and check it out. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, we will have some deals coming up in the next week or two for football season. So keep an eye out for that. Buddy, talk to you again tomorrow. Talk more baseball.
Yep.